You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Well, 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 welcome to Journeys with JP. Is this the first time in 2015? I think this is the first 2015. Yes, it's the first of the 2015. No, I had one last week. What the hell's going on? Yes, I did have one last week. What am I talking about? It's the 12th and not the 5th. So, yeah, anyway, so 12th of, as usual, I come in with a complete state of chaos and confusion. And there's been a bit of that recently. There's been such a storm recently in northern Scotland, going past my house, going past my chimney, that is causing me... I have to live in the other room. I can't use the stove in the kitchen because the chimney's getting blown down. Because of global changes, the wind blows now from a direction that it never used to blow when these houses were built. And that's been a bit of a problem, because the way that this house is built and the way the house next door is built, the chimney pots are directly in line on our east-southeast. Is it east-southeast? Or is it west? No, it's where the sun shines. West-south. That's right. Direction. Anyway, west-west-south. Very subtle. Just south of west. And... The wind now blows in that direction from all these Gulf Stream changes and all of that stuff. And so, for the first time, there's a venturi, little vacuum that's produced between the two chimney pots, and it causes a roll, and that roll then forces... It's like the vortexes that that salmon use to jump up the river, but instead it's in gas and it's wind and it's in the smoke from my neighbour's chimney, which then goes straight down my chimney. So I get the smell of their coal coming in my chimney, into my kitchen. I know that's a kind of irrelevant thing, but that's how things have changed, you know. Wind is blowing from different directions nowadays than it used to. So, tonight I was considering... talking about the galactic wave and what the implications of that might be and how we might all be experiencing it as we speak. I invite telephone call-ins. You can call in on the Studio B number, which I can never remember, so I'm going to have to log into the chat room here. But if you would also like to, if you're in Britain, for instance, and you're staying up late enough, and you can make free countrywide calls, as you can these days, what I'd like you to do is call 0141-356-4141. And just for that, I'll also now not forget to bring in Scottish Sovereigns on the Land. And they're not there. All right, so they can't do that. What happened to Gary? All right, okay. Uh-huh. Right, so I'll find out soon enough where the... why I can't get in. Oh, well, can't get in yet. So if you're in Britain, you can call this Scottish number 0141-356-4141. And if you're in the States, 775-773-3431... which is the Wolf Spirit radio number, which we are being simulcast on. Welcome to all the Wolf Spirit folk. And Scottish Sovereigns on the Land and Ever Beyond Radio, because that's my website, and that's my own website, everbeyondradio.com. Do come there. I've got some interesting... I've got all my archives, for a start, I'm going to be gathering more information. We've got various information packs that I'd like to put online. Maybe more teachings about the rays. 7rays.info is a bit quiet at the moment. I haven't put much on. It's just got a couple of my radio things, but I'd like to put more information there. So I've got loads of things that I'd like to do this year, and I'm determined to create the time to do so. So do watch out. With regard to growth in Wolf Spirit Radio, we'll be getting a good full schedule of hosts very soon, publicised all over the place. We're kind of having a relaunch, maybe. it always gets put back. But we're kind of staggering around a bit, and everybody's had holidays and this and that. So we'll be getting online with that and getting around to it. Maybe my strap line should be JP, getting around to things. Anyway, so let's see. Are we back in? So we're nearly back in. There we are. Right, okay. 310, if you're on Studio B, 310-421-4053. 310-421-4053. Those of you who've listened to Studio B for that long will actually know. Will actually know what that number is. So there we go. So, Patrick's got some shungite, have you? There we go. Lovely. 5 pieces of shungite. Lovely. Excellent. So, welcome everybody. It's good to be back here. Oh, the SJ, British Columbia. Oh, yes, this slate. Yes, this is, is that fullerene there, SJ? Because this is the thing. Yeah, 775-773-3431. 775-773-3431 is the Wolf Spirit Radio number. So, now, I've just typed that. If you check the chat room, I put it in at 1707. You'll see the badly typed things. Just ask Hal. So, there we go. Thank you, Hal. Hal is the best thing that we can offer in terms of artificial intelligence. He just responds to his name and number. You type in Hal or you type in number and he'll tell you the show numbers. Anyway, so yeah, it would be good to talk to you about... Now, what am I going to talk about? Tonight, I'd like to talk about the galactic wave or the galactic pulse or the galactic ribbon or the this or that. I've spoken it quite a few times, but I'd just like to kind of catch up because we're sort of in the middle of it. We've been talking about, we're waiting for it to come. But eventually we are here. And stuff is weird. Yes. Stuff is getting real, as they say. And we're seeing the effect of what happens when you apply consciousness to any situation, because that's what's happening. Many people are talking about the raising of the level of consciousness of humanity and of the planet, and the planet's ascending, and all this ascension talk and things like that. Okay, so let me start out with what is the wave? Great powder. All right. So, as I said, if anybody likes to to call in and we'll talk about this wave thing. Okay, so first of all, let's zoom out. Okay, so we zoom out to the to where we see the planet in our field of vision. And we zoom away from that until we can see the planets. You can see Jupiter and the Sun and everything. And as we now know, we're moving through space. So we're actually plotting a spiral line. So all these spirals coiling around each other. And as we zoom out further, we get to this solar system of solar systems, which we call the Pleiades. We are... Alcyone is the sun of this, and we're schlepping along behind in our spiral orbits with our spiral planets spiraling around us. And then that's the local galactic cluster, and then we zoom out to more galactic clusters which are all spiraling around each other until we come to the spiral arm, which is spiraling around itself, and we zoom out. Finally, we see the whole galaxy. Okay, so in the middle of the galaxy is this kind of bright ball of light, and as they say, the galaxy is a living being, and we're part of the living being. We're like, if you imagine, the planet is like one of the trillions of cells of the galaxy, and the sun is a cell, a master cell, a neuron maybe, and the galaxy has a consciousness. It's a living being, okay? And presumably, it has a larger consciousness than the consciousness that we have, you know, or that the sun has, or that the stars have. It's, you know, it's like a... there's SJ. It's like a large conscious entity that has a consciousness that pervades the galaxy as it is. And so when you have a when the galaxy, if you like, has a thought, that thought originates as a burst of energy in the center and ripples all the way out, and it seems to have a regular thought on the line of 26 to 52 million years as that wave is. So I believe that another one of these has just approached our solar system, has just basically hit our solar system, and we're experiencing the effects of it. I'm joined tonight by Captain SJ. Or is it?
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. How are you? Got a little bit of echo here on my side.
You'll get the echo when I don't fade my mic down fast enough.
Ah, good enough. Well, it's good to talk to you. It's been ages since we hooked up. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Happy New Year to you.
Well, same to you, sir. You know, I found an interesting thing. I was listening to Art Bell. I've been reviewing all of Art Bell's recorded stuff for the last 4 years since Hawk introduced me to his recordings. And he was discussing the spiral path of our planet. But an interesting thing came out of that interview. For example, when they put satellites up, they found out that they had to change the position of the satellites. And you know that predicting a path in space is what NASA, amongst many others, do. And they found out that their predictions were always off by a little bit, and they figured that was caused by surrounding dark matter, that's what Art Bell called it, that's what a lot of people call it, was an effect caused by the amount of dark matter in our solar system affecting the satellites. Isn't that interesting? So as carefully as we have mapped that spiral, we still haven't got it absolutely right yet. Over.
So we haven't.
No.
And this is interesting. Dark matter. Alex Collier.
Matter on planetary planetary orbits.
It causes a drag. Now, Alex Collier.
A change, yeah, sure.
Alex Collier once said to me that dark matter, this is what the Andromedan said to him, so it's got to be true, that dark matter is matter that has not been formed by thought.
Oh, is that an interesting concept?
Isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to go to the my walkie-talkie phone so I can get some coffee. Do you mind?
Oh, I wish I had one of those. But I've got speakers.
Oh, it is. Oh, I got, cool.
I got speakers in the kitchen. But
stand by.
There we go. Clicking over.
And did we make it?
Yep, we're there. We're still there.
Oh my God.
So, galactic wave.
Galactic waves caused by non-thinking entities are left over from global or astronomical occurrences.
Well, as I was just completing as you called in, is that the galaxy? I see the galaxy like a huge brain, yep. And that from the central core of it. Presumably, there's some little planet with a little lonely old man sitting in a little house right in the middle, saying, "Hello,
hello.
Have you come to see me? I am the ruler of this galaxy." Anyway, so there he is, sitting in his little house, in his little planet, in the middle of this galactic cluster. And every time he has a thought, which is something like every 52 million years, a wave ripples out from the center all the way to the edge, and that it goes through all the different color phases and all of these things, and they when that, for instance, hits a sun, it's like it gives the sun an extra charge,
right?
And when the sun gets an extra charge, it gives the planets an extra charge. And when the planet gets an extra charge, it gives its inhabitants an extra charge, and so on. And each time it steps down a level of energy. Now, some people who are cosmically aware are feeling the effect, even that the effect that the sun has, or the effect that the that affects the sun. And then there's also another galactic phenomenon that is of an order larger than a galaxy, that is also stimulating the galaxy to do this thing. So it's all a big chain. Yeah, there's a sort of super galaxy that the galaxy is part of, that it's getting a wave as well.
Now, one of the best descriptions of that occurred in the Urantia book back in the 1950s. Over.
Tell me about it.
Well, the Urantia book was a bunch of heavy thinkers that got together in an area. You can read up on the history of it, but basically they were exposed to a lot of different things, including including messages from other beings in the universe of universes who are guides and maintainers, actually caretakers of the planet Earth and its population. And it's quite involved, huge book, probably close to 600, maybe 800 pages, very long, elaborate story of the formation of the universe and the universe of universes, which is very complicated thought back in the 1950s. People weren't thinking of other universes. They weren't aware of other universes. It was a theoretical concept for a few people on Earth at that time. 1950, right? We're just starting to get into heavy science. We're starting to explore how the mind works. Interesting period of history. Anyhow, the Ranch book basically talks about how the universe of universes was created. And it has some elaborate details on the God of all of the universes. Now, that concept of God has been evolving lately. People are being exposed to lots of other religions with complementary, if somewhat different, belief structures. And what you, when you study comparative religion, if you're a comparative religious scholar, and I'm an amateur, but I'm a serious scholar of religions on this planet, you realize that they have a lot in common, which is very interesting. You go back to the oldest information, the Nagamata, for one thing. Is that the way to say that? Nagamati?
Nagamati.
Yeah.
Nagamati.
Yeah. So anyhow, the Urantia book is basically telling you how the universe is oriented. Now, our concept of God is changing radically in this period of history. My concept of God is that God is a collection of all of the intellects everywhere throughout every version of time as we think of it, past, future, all those souls are out there in a sort of a intergalactic area for knowledge, for entities, for spiritual thought. And I believe that we maintain a certain amount of that spirituality as we move to other lives. And I think that there might be something to having other lives when we die. It could be that Earth is basically a training school for somebody that has to later maintain and operate and deal with whatever version, whatever concept of interaction you're thinking about with the rest of the universe. You know, the story, the Yurenshi book, is about layers of galactic management. Also has, the last part of it, last quarter of it, is a hands-on observation of Christ's life from birth to death. And I'll tell you, it's either the greatest science fiction that's ever been written, or it's a really unusual, true story about what really has happened to this planet in its existence. And it's only one of millions of other planets with intelligent life. And one of the stories it talks about is the fact that some of them don't make it. They get to this point, and we've got two things that really worry me. Radiation, because of the half-life of some of it lasts up to 4.5 billion years. Uranium-238 specifically. That worries me, and I'll tell you, international releases of that incredible vast amount of methane on the ocean floor as it warms up really worries me, because we're talking about something that can rip our radiation shielding, our, you know, the radiation belts that are around us, our atmosphere basically, can be radically disrupted and actually destroyed by huge methane gas releases. And we've got continent-sized methane deposits out there. If they all blow, and they blow when it gets warm and our ocean currents are warming, that's what really worries me about continuity on this planet for our form of life. Over.
Well, that's cheerful news. Yeah, but I know, but the whole presentation what am I talking about? Blah blah blah. Yep. So I'll start. So, you know when you start on a thought, and or your mouth starts a sentence, but the mind, and that's what I'm talking about. It's the distinction. Now, you covered a lot of ground. You covered a lot of cosmos there. I want to take it back a little bit, back to the galaxy, because.
I gave you the digested. Reader's Digest version of it. Over.
Okay. So, but going back to the galaxy, is that in the same way that humans have an indwelling soul, you know, mm-hmm. which is like, it's not something that is separate from the person that I'm talking to here. It is the person who I'm talking to in reality.
Right.
But in a reality that is more akin to your dream world. And you are like Avatar driving this vehicle that we call SJ from BC.
Well, you know, a lot of the Buddhists have said all of this is illusion. Over.
Well, whether it's illusion or whether it's meat or, you know, or whether meat can be an illusion, and there may be maybe a translation issue with that. It may be everything is a construct, as a construction. And it's grown. It's like a hologram that's grown from the inside.
Well, this would make, in terms of my, pardon me for interrupting, but this would make sense in terms of the kind of God I'm visualizing, because that God would be growing. It would be changing. He would be evolving with his universe as it goes, because he's the collection of every thinking entity in that universe. It might be that it's just local. Maybe we just have a local God. Maybe there's a God of gods that we don't know about.
That's the thing, all right? And that, I believe, is what has been personified and is called the spiritual hierarchy.
Right on.
And so, for instance, that I have my indwelling soul, But that indwelling soul is part of a soul group, and that soul group is the manifestation of this chunk of planet, this land that I am standing on, has what they call an angel. That is the indwelling soul of its body, right? And I, me, speaking to you, I'm part of that, and you're part of yours. And when people talk about, you know, what do the Native Americans worship? Well, they don't worship, they recognize that they are the soul of the land expressing in through human avatars. And that turns the whole thing upside down, inside out, and it's true. And it ain't true if it ain't part of a fractal omniverse, as I always say.
Well, that's it. You know, we just started learning about fractals and that kind of thought. And that thought has sat there and fermented, and we've came up with some thought wine, maybe beer. But fermentation, you know, the idea has fermented, and we've been able to think further as a group because we share that idea. So shared awareness sort of leads to shared consciousness, ideally. It certainly did in Fritz Perls' early experiments with thinking and parapsychology. Over.
Right, parapsychology and thinking. I don't know where that... Right, okay. The way I see things from the inside out, which is why everything, and it's a journey from the inside to the outside, and that is called an expression. It's expressing, it's pressing its way out in the same way that a tree pushes its way out from the surface of our world.
Exactly.
Feel that energy pushing the. Imagine the tree being planted as a seed and speeded up, time-lapse photography, over 100 years as it pushes its way out into this world. Okay? That is expression, and that's what souls do into the world, through us.
Well, Gaia Sophia mythos. Have you ever heard of Gaia Sophia mythos?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Gaia. Everybody Gaia. Has... Many people have different pronunciations, but yes, Gaia... Or right. Sophia. We could say that there's like a trinity in there. There's the Mother Mary type thing, which is like that's the sea, and then there's the land, Gaia, and then there's the wisdom aspect, the Sophia. Yeah, there's loads of different qualities, which we call goddesses, because for some reason, someone told humans that you've got to worship something. But,
well, I don't think...
Yeah, I don't agree, but that's what people do.
I think that's, I think it came out of trying to interpret what an ocean is. When you're on an ocean, you know it's a tendency to think of it as an individual, and I'll tell you, it's wise to think of it as an individual. Over.
It's a bit like being a drop that has come from a bucket, that has come from the reservoir, that's come from the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's what people mean when they say we're all one. You know.
Well, you know, water is amazing because it has three states, and it's the only thing that I know of that can have those three states, where it goes from a liquid to steam to a gas, and the gas at this point can be separated into two basic fuel systems. You know, oxygen and hydrogen. So that's an even further development of our concept of what water can be. And I think we as a civilization are reaching that point right now. I think what's happening is Gaia is trying to warn us and is communicating as clearly as she can. I mean, there's nothing more definitively an exaggeration point than a volcano. Over.
A volcano?
Yeah, a volcano is an exaggeration point. And Gaia's message to us. If we don't watch out, she's going to shake us. She'll continue. You know, there's stories in the Gaia Sophia mythos about the planet Earth being an intelligent entity created in the center of the universe that travels out here and is currently with us. But Gaia has the ability, according to the mythos, to be able to travel on her own. Now, that's an interesting concept, to think of a planet as a individual that was birthed in the center of our galaxy and enjoyed the ability to travel enough to come out here to see what it's like. You know, we don't want to change your mind rapidly, that's for sure. Over.
Well, look, if you think of a galaxy, right? What is a galaxy? Somewhere in the middle of a galaxy is something. To me, right? It's,
right.
Again, I'm a complete inside-outer, right? Everything in nature grows from the small point to the big. A seed grows into a tree. Trees don't get smaller. Nothing gets smaller. Everything grows from a tiny thing to a big thing. You grew from a sperm to an SJ, yeah? As we all have.
Yep.
So, if you think like that, then a galaxy must follow the same procedure. And so from what I'm thinking that there's a, something starts as a spurting out and a rotation. And as it gets bigger and spurts out more and rotates more, it spins and it then starts chucking things out and it drags and pinches on the local space, on the local, this rotation is creating a, a vortex energy, a spin, and it's, but it's also chucking stuff out. So that's and as it grows, you can see then it'll spread out filaments. But as these filaments, as the thing slows down as it gets bigger, and the filaments start spreading out, they will keep moving, spreading out, but they will slow down with the drag of the space that they're pushing into. And that's what a galaxy looks like.
Currently, they're arguing about whether it's expanding or contracting, because the speed is off intergalactically from what we think it was following the Big Bang. But one of the interesting things about our society is that for years we've known about the Big Bang, but we haven't talked about, in other words, we've known about black holes. But we have only recently started to talk in available newspapers, periodicals, and shows about white holes. Now, you know, you can think of a black hole as sort of like a cosmic blender, and everything that goes in it eventually goes somewhere. It becomes something. And it could easily, considering the size of some of the black holes that are out here, it could be the source of future galaxies. Certainly, you know, it's like a blender. You throw in a whole bunch of planets and solar systems and galaxies, and it gets full, and it finally has to upchuck it somewhere. Well, we don't know about that yet, but it is an interesting way of thinking about the universes and their creation.
Well, what happened?
Pardon me?
Sorry, SJ, I'm just getting this feeling, this thought, right? What would happen if we realized that the Tau symbol, the ancient Tau symbol, there's the black within the white and the white within the black, spinning around each other? That's a galaxy and a black hole, and that's what they are.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so a black hole is the end of a white hole is the other end of a black hole. And they spin around, and they and they're spinning in opposite directions, obviously. And once you have reversed the polarity, you come out the other side, and that's probably the same as what they call the Einstein-Rosen bridge, or the old-fashioned wormhole, or the very, very old-fashioned boat of Ra, or what we call nowadays a Stargate.
Exactly. You know, it seems, you know, we're beginners and we're amateurs, you know, we only have limited ability to understand some of these theoretical concepts, right? But, you know, nature has a way of being able to communicate with you. What happens on the micro happens many times, similarly on the macro, right? And we know that. We've learned that in the last few generations. You know, the ability to think like that is what has changed in a galaxy that's undergoing, well, in a planet culture that's undergoing exponential change in terms of its realities. Over.
So, planetary expansion.
Possible.
Global expansion. Stellar expansion. Everything expands. Everything it grows. So, now, so as I say, when you said that Gaia came from the center of the galaxy,
theoretically.
All right. Now, but if you think,
so,
everything once came from the center of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where everything comes from. You know,
right.
The galaxies put out stars, and stars put out more stars, and eventually stars put out planets, and planets put out people.
Well, one of the problems we have currently is that we don't know what's at the center of the galaxy. Some people are thinking it's a black hole. It would make sense if it was a black hole. It might also be an inverted black hole. We haven't found that yet because all of the planets get in our way of taking a really good look at it. You know, because we are in a horizontal plane, more or less, with the rest of our galaxy. Over.
That's right. We're at the edge of, if you imagine a CD, and you take about like a centimeter or two, or just less than a centimeter from the edge, and then look inwards. That's our view of the galaxy. If we could look just along the edge of that disk, that's how we see the galaxy. And that's, as you say, we can't see what's right in the middle because there's so much stuff in the midst. And that's why they're trying different wave bands of gamma rays and all these things that they're building detectors for that increase our spectral view of the universe. And we see that the galaxy is actually a sphere, not just a disk.
Exactly. Well, there's a lot to, you know, I figure in the future, you know, 2015, time for predictions, right? Everybody does New Year's predictions. I predict in the next decade we're going to find out about things we never imagined existed.
Indeed. Or we'll find out, and we are finding out, we find out that these old stories are not legends. They
right.
are, they're well, not myths.
That could be a mind blower or what?
You know, we're now, you know, because obviously in the 1930s, the Nazi Party took this stuff seriously and investigated all the legends of the world and found a lot of very useful toys, including de Glock. And they went ahead and ripped a hole in space-time, being the Nazis that they are, stupid bastards. Anyway, I think I can say bastards.
There's an argument there.
Who you are? Yeah.
Their explosion that opened up that hole.
Say that again. I lost what you said.
The original stories about changes in our access to other world dimensions was blamed on atomic bombs being used and tested.
Oh no! This is before that. This is in the 30s.
Because of spiritual ritual. They were looking for the Sword of Longinus for a long time. I wonder if they ever found it.
Ah, well, the Sword of Longinus, or the Spear of Longinus, that's one of the specialities of my colleague Nancy. We'll maybe, Nancy, if you want to call in and give us an update on who's got the bloody spear? Because I'll tell you, Hitler believed it, that the holder of the sphere, the spear, is the ruler of the planet.
Yep.
There are other stories. Now this one comes from James Casbolt. James Casbolt. So, you know, whatever, you know, what's the word? Discernment applies. But he says that this stuff, the metal that it was made from, is from the diamond spiders. The mines of this material on the moon of Jupiter, or is it Saturn? Which one is it? It's Iapetus, it's called. And that there are diamond mines there. No, they're not diamond mines. There's this material mines, but they're guarded by diamond spiders. So, hence the Diamond Spiders of Iapetus, which sounds like a great name for an old sci-fi episode.
Yeah, I've always pronounced that Iapetus.
Okay. But have you heard of that story?
Not that one particularly, but I've heard about off-planet machines capable of moving moons stored in orbit in the outer planets. And I've always been intrigued by those kinds of stories. I've only seen a few. But they reportedly had some evidence, which they showed. You know, the Internet is really amazing. We've got the ability to show some incredible images. Whether they're legitimate or not remains to question, but having machines that size in our universe, considering its age, its availability, you know, we are in a major cluster of our solar system, of our universe. You know, we are accessible. We would be almost the first kinds of habitable planets you would encounter coming in from our edge of the universe. And it's likely we have had many complex civilizations here that have withered and been reborn. We certainly have had planetary happenings, great floods, etc., that have taken us to nearly extinction levels, theoretically. You know, all of this is theoretical because we still need to examine truth, but looking at the archaeological evidence, you know, the objects that are not supposed to be talked about by modern history, natural history writers and thinkers, right? Unexplained objects. What do they call those? Wolves? Lots?
Uparts? Out-of-place artifacts?
Yeah, out-of-place... oops! Yeah, right. Or Upa?
Uparts. Which Upa. Sounds like... It sounds like a euphonium sound from... Upart, Upa.
Upa, Upa, Upa. Well, you know, that's a wonderful concept, and it was pretty well done. Who is writing about illegal anthropology, forbidden anthropology?
Well, there was forbidden archaeology, which was Cremo.
Yes, we have talked with Mr. Cremo on our station. I figured that was really a gift to be able to yak with him. I talked to him for a show that me and I think it was Painter, me and a Mad Painter did a show and talked to him, I believe, one night. Might have been someone else, but we have had some great guests on our show, considering we're amateur hour in terms of international media. Over.
Well, I'd say we're small. But certainly Studio A is getting a good bit of exposure, and that always, you know, people will then be drawn and come along and join the more esoteric and slightly more sweary Studio B on Revolution Radio, which, by the way, we have to thank Hawk for providing us with excellent airtime, and I'd also recommend everybody buying the seed pack, because that's the best thing you could do for your future. If you have a seed pack, you know that at least in a few months' time you won't starve. You know, I don't know if he's got. I'd like to know if anybody's doing a Sprouter seed pack where you can, you know, get loads of onion seeds or mung bean seeds or things like that. That would be a really good thing. I'm a real aficionado of mung bean sprout. Mung bean sprouts. Yes.
We had a winter in Queen Charlotte Island where we got this overwhelming need for sprouts. So we explored it, and we were buying, like, you know, a pound of mung beans and sprouting them inside glass jars. And we had the most delicious sprouts. We tried all kinds. And you can't believe how good they are to put on a sandwich. They're easy to put on a sandwich, and they taste, add a tremendous amount of flavor. Over.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, well, the thing about this, all right, so this brings me to the whole thing, right? Okay, his more radical views that I have. I believe that humans are electrical beings. We run on electricity. We don't run on food. We run on electricity. And that we are such an amazing machine that we're able to exist when there's not enough power to store out, to store in ourselves. We're able to exist by consuming the carbon content of anything in our path and generating electricity from that carbon. Over.
Yeah, that's pretty much a simplified version of the whole bazoo, but it applies. We can do that up to certain limits. You can't sit there and chew on coal, right? On the other hand, certain forms of, like shungite, for example, they're talking about its constituent makeup, including buckyballs. Now, buckyballs are a pretty interesting formation of molecules. Really interesting, and it's supposedly with healing abilities. And I was talking about the fact that it sort of resembles, in many ways, argillite, which is found here, well, it's found over the United States, but in the Queen Charlotte Islands, or Haida Gwaii as it's now called by the Haida, there's a deposit of argillite that is now considered to be the sole property and use of the Haida. And the Haida use it for carving, and they make a traditional run. Actually, you get all the kids together because they're young and they can carry chunks of argillite. They weigh a lot. And they take everybody that's learning how to carve it up into the reserve's quarry. And the kids quarry the rock. They have to saw it out. You can cut it with a handsaw, though, which is pretty handy. And then they pack down as big a chunk as they can carry, and that's how it's quarried and used on the Queen Charlotte Islands. And I see a tremendous message in that use of a sacramental or ornamental mineral. Over.
Well, this is very interesting because they said that fullerene only occurs in two places on this planet. One in Russia and the other in Kanukistan, otherwise known as Canada. So what you're probably talking about is the other deposit of fullerenes. Is it on the surface or is it mined?
I didn't find fullerenes in my research of argillite. However, it's a sedimentary rock basically made of mud. And I would guess that maybe shungite is also a mineral, or basically a deposit, a metamorphosed deposit of clay. But unfortunately, it doesn't say that in the article I was reading about shungite. Over.
Right. Well, shungite. Let's have a look. Let me just grab a piece and check it. What we've discovered so far is that it has got a kind of spherical structure. So imagine if you have you dip a sphere in a liquid and the liquid dries, and then you dip it again and it dries and it dries again. So eventually you'll get a big sphere. And that's the way. That's what we call accretion. That's how things grow. We grow another layer of cells on the outside, and we grow bigger. You know.
Let me interrupt you for a second.
Okay. So, but that's how it shears. When you crack it, it'll shear with this spherical edge, like as if you're taking a piece out of an onion.
Yep. Exactly. Now, one of the things I've got several turquoise, globular formations, and it occurs because it's coming out of the earth as a highly enriched carbon ore, and as it cools, that's when the crystallization from the superheated steam burying all these copper ores, as it cools, it will layer just like you're describing for shungite. And I've got several examples here. Makes me curious as to whether, like shungite, whether these kinds of deposits have additional significance in terms of healing. Over.
Well, here's the thing, all right? What's the thing about Shanghai? It's got this. It seems to have a lot of this fullerene. Now they say in the '90s they were like experimenting. You know, how do we make these round carbon 60s? And they said, oh, it can't occur on Earth. How can it occur? You know, it's got to be some kind of extreme thing. So it can only happen in space. So I'm thinking, I wonder myself if it's the kind of debris that comes out of the most massive carbon arc lamp you could imagine.
Yep, a solar system.
A solar system star.
Yep, probably.
So I believe that Shanghai is stardust. It's like,
well, you know, without,
it coughed up a hawk.
You know, without stardust, we wouldn't exist, literally. We need the kind of atoms that are produced in a fusion reaction. And the biggest fusion reaction we have is the sun, currently, that we can observe. And
if you believe that.
Pardon me, sir?
If you believe that that's the way the sun works, yeah. There are opposing theories.
Oh, God, yes. The ability of the human mind to come up with a good argument always amazes me, but I've learned to enjoy it. Over.
Well, anyway, as I was saying before, you know, with in terms of the electric universe and the electric human, because as I was saying before, we're an electric. We run on electricity. We don't do. There's nothing else. You know, the reason that we eat food is simply to find stuff that we can generate electricity from. We're like the best. Have you heard of the Geet motor? G-E-E-T. It's a Geet because it's Dutch, right? And they have this sound. Hello. Anyway, that this thing basically turns anything from wax to diesel to lighter fuel into a form of plasma. That is run in a very small, you know, you can run it in a little, like, lawnmower engine even, run a little generator off it. It works by, forcing the air at high temperature and high pressure through a very small gap. And it superheats it and turns it to plasma, as we were talking before. And so it'll burn any old crap.
Well, similar to refrigeration in many ways, one of the things I did was learn about steam engines, and then I learned about refrigeration, and then I learned about heat engines. They have little kits on that you can build. Always wanted to build one. They're fascinating. Aren't they truly incredible?
Well, I've seen on YouTube a tin can. You can make it from a bit of wire and a tin can and a rubber balloon for the diaphragm. That's the key bit, is the diaphragm, and the diaphragm makes movement that opens up a valve, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah, it's a valve that needs the flexibility of rubber to happen. But it's a common valve. It's in many ways it resembles a steam engine, especially when they got into superheated steam, which is a very interesting phenomenon. I've studied that in terms of repairing steam engines. At one time, I was working on a steam engine that was two stories tall. Ever seen one that big?
When I was 6 years old, I went to Canada with my parents, and I remember seeing this thing that was going from somewhere to Campbellton. I don't know where Campbellton is. But we were in Quebec, and it was like a massive steam train with this bell that went ding 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 ding. I remember ding 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 ding. That was a big mother, yeah, but probably even bigger than that.
So when you went next to it, you might have been at that age as high as the axles on the driver wheels. The later steam engines in Canada, especially the Royal Columbians, had wheels that were 6 feet tall. Now, that's a big engine. You know what I mean? They were built in 1949, the same year, the last of them were built in 1949, the same year I was born, and lasted until I was a teenager. And I'll tell you, we used to love standing next to the tracks as these things come by, and in the later years they would have maybe six of them hooked together going to the scrapyards, right? And the steam in North America. It was quite a period. Steam engines are massive and wonderful. So are diesels, but which most people are familiar with. But steam engines had life. They had a life that was different from diesel engines. They had
You know, here we go back, and here's a weird thought that I've had that will carry across the break that's just going to come up soon. What if everything in this universe is conscious? What if gasoline and water, we know water is conscious. What if when you use gasoline, every time an explosion happens, the gasoline hurts? Think about that, brothers and sisters, as you drive your cars.
Brilliant thought.
What a thought, eh? You know, that every time you every time the ignition fires in your engine, it hurts Gaia.
Exactly.
Not aside from all the other stuff, but it kind of hurts it almost on a spirit level because you're dealing with the spirit. So, don't go away while you think of that thought and consider all the things that came to you by way of the internal combustion engine. Don't go away. A little bit of Andromeda in there for you. So, good afternoon. This is Journeys with JP. I was just going to say Ever Beyond Radio. On Ever Beyond Radio, on Wall Spirit Radio, on Revolution Radio, at freedomslips.com, which is 100% pure, homegrown, organic, free-range, liquid crystal plasma display of a radio station, number one on the internet, and we're the number two station on the number one internet. Studio B, yes, no second rate citizens here. We're all equal. So extinction level event. So where are we? We were talking about gasoline. Oh yeah, gasoline explosions. That's right. Something to think about. SJ, are you still online? No, he are gone. But I did ask him... Oh, there he is. Let's see. Is he... No. Yes. All right, I thought you were on... You were on Skype. Are you on Skype? But there we go. Never mind. The Lord of the Temporal House you speak of. Yes. Yes. Anyway, meanwhile. Yeah, so just imagine... You know, that every time you set off your car, you start your car, four times every cycle, brrr, ow, it hurts somewhere. Yeah. Sobering thought, because we're all reliant on it. We're all reliant on the combustion engine. What happens? One day when the great petrol being in the sky comes down and says, "What have you been doing to my girlfriend?" You know, what's going to happen then? The big petrol being, yeah. All right, good idea, JP. Anyway, meanwhile, we're talking about the galactic wave. And the galactic wave does give us a broadened perspective because it gives us more energy. It gives us more energy. We have the ability to see higher. For instance, if you're small and you go up somewhere, you expand energy, you go up a hill, you can see more. You have a higher perspective. And a more distant horizon, a further horizon. And so as you expand your horizon, as you rise up, you see more and more and more until you can see the planet. And yeah, so we did that before and we got out to the galaxy. Oh, there's that sound. Hey.
Hey.
All right, are you on a telephone?
I'm on a telephone.
All right. Is that do you not have a Skype thing here?
I'm cooking breakfast right now.
All right. Oh, very kind of us. Bring us into the kitchen, SA style. Lots of maple syrup, hey?
Yeah, maple syrup. And the formula was, let me think about it here, it was a special starvation diet that two musicians went on. And it was lemon juice and a layer of cayenne pepper on top of that, a quarter inch of the lemon juice, cayenne pepper fresh on top of that, and another quarter inch of, of maple syrup on the top, and you added water to it, drank another glass of water, regular tumbler, and that was your diet for a starvation period that they experimented with. One of them was Willie Nelson. And it was when they were writing a series of songs that they recorded over.
The phrase comes to mind, they were Hendrix high.
Yeah, could have been. They were trying starvation. Eastern mysticism was having an influence. We're talking about the late 70s, 80s. So we were talking about gasoline explosions, and I was thinking, you know, what if the result of gasoline explosions in terms of its, spiritual relationship to Gaia, our mother planet, was a giant migraine headache? What if gasoline explosions were a headache? Over.
Well, that's exactly what I'm thinking. You know, it would be, I mean, thousands and thousands of tiny explosions. It would be like an all-over ache of some kind, wouldn't it? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think right now this planet is an entity that I give intelligence to personally. And I think she is like waving her arms and going, hey, pay attention, man. If you strip away your radiation shield, the sun's going to fry you. And the Hopi, amongst other tribes, have a religious belief structure that incorporates our next death. And this is existence 5. Or 4 in their world cosmos, in their cosmology. And they figured this one, we die by fire. And these are lessons that the planet teaches us, right? I'll tell you, as far as lessons to be learned for a future intergalactic maintenance man, this is pretty severe, right?
Well, here we are. The galactic wave is, you could say, that was the equivalent of a galaxy flare. Like a solar flare, you got a galaxy flare.
Sure.
And that galaxy flare has the same effect on the sun as a solar flare has on the Earth.
Theoretically.
Yeah. And that a series of that this is a periodic thing that happens all the time, you know, in enormously great cycles, and we've had some water cycles, some earth cycles, you know, some air cycles, and fire cycles before, but like a really, really long time ago, like millions of years. So it's many millions of years, long before humanity could live on the planet. So nobody remembered them last time, but this is what's happening now. And
it's get together with Dave and Mickey and have this conversation.
Well, bring them on if they're around. I don't mind joining it up. But, we're obviously talking the same stuff because the same stuff is reality. You know, we're not all nutters.
I understand you because I'm as weird as you are. Now, I don't know how many other people are as weird as us that actually understand what we're talking about, but it's sort of fun for those of us that do. Over.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would like to. Well, I'm going to have to do a little meditation on that, because like I was talking about it before. Just like I said just before you joined, is we would, if you imagine, you're looking at a cinema screen. Okay, everybody, imagine you're in a cinema and it's dark, and then suddenly you see a point. That point zooms in, and you realize that point is the Earth. And you zoom in, and you zoom into your country, and you zoom into your town, and you zoom into your apartment in that town. You know where you are. Yeah. And then you zoom in, and you see inside your apartment, you see yourself. And you see yourself sitting in that chair. And then you feel yourself as you see yourself sitting in that chair. Okay, and then, right, now you're sitting in that chair. You're imagining yourself in a cinema. And you see the Earth in front of you. And you zoom out from the Earth and you see the Sun and the planets around the Earth. And you zoom out from the Sun and you see that the Sun is similarly placed around a larger star. And we're kind of well out on the rim of that solar system as well. And you zoom out further and you realize that little solar system, that star system, is part of a much larger solar system. And then we realize that this is the contents of the spiral arms of a single galaxy. And the galaxy has been around so many times that the single arms have been twisted around like a tree in the wind.
Like a pinwheel.
And you zoom out further, and you see the light in the middle.
Right.
And that light is pulsing out in rainbow colors very, very slowly. And the colors...
You know, the possibility exists here going to be able to perceive things that we cannot perceive at the moment in the next few decades. That's my prediction. Over.
Well, you just need to extrapolate.
Right.
This, what we see in other galaxies, we see these rainbow stripes going in the other galaxies, and we see them instantaneously. You don't see them, that they're moving. But we can't see them moving because it's so slow to our perspective of time, which apparently is slowed down. Apparently, you look up in the sky and the... On some other planets where time is different, you look up in the sky and you see the galaxy spinning around like pinwheels and stuff. Anyway, let's see. Area code 5019. Hello, who are you? Where are you?
Hi, Jeff from Ontario, Canada.
Jeff from Ontario. Oh my gosh, we're having there's a three Canuck. Three Canuck show. Hey.
No.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Dr. Miller?
Oh, that was a big, horrible noise. Who made that?
I'm here.
Yes, you are.
Anyway. Oh, that's the one, Jeff.
Okay, are we there now?
Yeah, yep. Try not to touch your screen or your buttons.
I am talking on a VoIP telephone, so there you go.
Cool.
Yes. Dr. Richards. Dr. Miller. Dr. Richard Miller. I heard earlier in the program where you were wondering how many people are listening to JP. And I've listened to you on many, many programs, Dr. Miller. JP has a good following. So don't worry about who's listening. We do listen. We might just not call in. And that's about all I wanted to say. So JP, I thank you for bringing on Dr. Richard Miller. And keep doing what you do.
That would be great if this was a show where Dr. Richard Miller actually was. Jeff, I'm afraid that you're not speaking with Dr. Richard Allen, but indeed SJ from British Columbia.
No way, he sounds so much like then Dr. Richard Miller.
Well, there you go. You've got some gravitas there, SJ.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be associated with that particular intellectual being. I've listened to many of his shows in the old Art Bell days. Maybe that's an influence.
I just listened to him yesterday on another network.
Great.
And it's uncanny. I'm sorry, because I've listened to you before, Jay, but yes, and that's uncanny. Wow. Yes, you would make a great double then. I stand corrected. I'm going to sit down corrected. My Lord, I guess I kind of went, wow. So I guess what I guess saying there then is you're also doing what needs to be done, and that's learning and passing on that learning. That's awesome.
Right on, bro. Right on. Same to you.
Well, I guess I'll give it. That's a shout out to you, man. Thank you very much for allowing me to do that. Yeah.
Well, I consider it an elaborate and slightly exaggerated compliment. I am, like most of us, a flawed human trying to figure out how to unflaw myself. You know what I mean?
Well,
over.
Aren't we all? So, anyway, so, hey, Gene, thanks for letting me on and making a fool of myself.
No, you're not a fool, friend.
And I hope one day that you will get on this, Richard Miller, because there's questions that you would be able to ask him, just like those hosts do, which would really enhance our knowledge base.
Dr. Miller has an amazing perspective, and that's what all of us are offering. You know, the problem with our data is that a lot of it is changing as we speak. And we have limited ability to speak technical language and thoughts. But we're overcoming that. That's my observation. People that you couldn't talk to about radiation, you can now talk to about radiation. They know what alpha, beta, and gamma radiation is. That wasn't happening 30 years ago, 20 years ago even. Over.
That is correct, only because we really didn't have in our vocabulary a thing called nuclear.
Right. I was on a show, my first radio show I did as a child was in 1958. I was 8 years old, and I was interested in nuclear technology, so I read up on it, and the nuns were so impressed by my, book reports, because I was reading about 10 times what the other students in my class were reading. It was sort of a phenomenon. So they grabbed me and stuck me on a show with a disc jockey in Cleveland, Ohio, talking to another graduate student of nuclear physics, and we were discussing radiation and what it is, what an atomic structure is. So that's what we were talking about in 1958, and that was new information. And that was the year that we had the first electrical generation plant that was nuclear. The first nuke plant was going in 1958 in New York.
And hence I harken back to the what we just talked about the vocabulary, late 20s, that word nuclear and to break it down into those isotopes, if you want to call it, wouldn't have been thought of prior to that. Nikolai Tesla would not have thought of that because that was not his vocabulary.
Actually, Marie Curie developed a lot of nuclear technology and language.
Oh, yes, you were very correct. Yes, I forgot all about her.
And Tesla offered to cure her of radiation poisoning, and having heard that, I have asked probably 50 people if they know anything more about how that would occur, but I am constantly finding little hidden nooks of Tesla knowledge. For example, I just found a good hookup for Tesla shows talking about Tesla technology. Unfortunately, I don't think we have any major recordings of Tesla talking about his technology, but I am researching, and maybe we'll unbury one of those one day. What do you think? I think it'd be cool.
I think researching Tesla technology is very cool. Unfortunately, we're behind the eight ball on that one because the majority of his works were, of course, confiscated by those that did not want to allow that technology to be out within us.
And well, fortunately, Tesla sent a lot of that same technology before that incident to different countries. He sent a lot of his statistical and data to his, I believe it's his nephew. And his nephew was in the old country that Tesla came from. So there are lots of things that still are going to be unburied concerning Tesla and his technology in the future. I mean, we're just starting to figure it out. It wasn't until Burden started talking about transmitting electricity through the ether, and scientists now no longer talk about the ether, but many have figured out, as an incidental side note to what I'm saying, a lot of people think that the ether is actually black matter, or dark matter, as Art Bell calls it. Over.
Well, if we look at the ether, okay, let's say we take technology and draw off the energy of the ether, look what's happening today upon this planet. We're being blanketed by a very thin barrier that will not allow us to get to the ether. How's that?
Yeah, and also we're being fried by the sun. Over.
I have to totally disagree with you there.
Oh, good.
I disagree with you there. I absolutely. The sun is what sustains this planet, this solar system. Okay, and its planet. To take away the natural progression of what the sun does. I mean, let's think about it. We had a mini ice age back in the reign of Henry VIII. I don't know how many people were on the planet at that time, burning oil, having all this nuclear fallout from all successive atmospheric explosions and whatnot. I don't remember. They went from a warming to a cooling, a mini ice age. Right across the northern north. Okay, so my question is, we have now gone and manipulated. How do we know if the natural progression is not exactly that? And in 500 years from now, we'll be right back where we are right now.
Well, maybe it's closer to a 36,000 year period, of course, if you look at it long term. But yeah, you're right, it could be, it's possible. It's theoretically substantiated by evidence. JP, what do you think?
Well, specifically?
Yeah. If you can.
Well, like I said, nature, if you look at nature, it always grows from the inside out. Nothing ever grows as a result of something being made as a shell. You know, only we make things as shells. It always grows from the inside, even chicken eggs, you know, the shell comes last.
Yeah.
So it always grows from the inside out. So if you look at anything in nature, which is galaxies and droplets of water and all of these things, they all seem to operate under a kind of fluid dynamic kind of operation, you know. So if you think in terms of fluid dynamics, then you see how the galaxy is a living being, like the same way that a hydra or an octopus is.
Well, I'm holding an animal that grows from the inside out in my hand. It's called an egg. So I would think that would be a good symbolism for what you're trying to express. Over.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you for that lineup, for that setup. I say exactly. Boom, boom. Anyway, so we managed to squeeze one sad pun out of this last. Anyway, go on.
What you managed to do is to articulate the natural. Earth has its own natural shell.
Yeah, actually, I'm eating it for breakfast.
And once you start manipulating within that shell, if you want to call it the embryo, embryotic fluid, if you want to call it core of the, whatever, how you want to look at it, JP. Okay.
Amniotic.
the ambiotic, you start with the ambiotic fluid. And that's exactly what's happening. That's what's happening now, the ambiotic fluid. Okay, yes. I had to, listening earlier, yes. I mean, everything is living. And it goes through a progression of dying and going, and wherever it goes from there, it's just keeps going. It can be linear, it can be parallel, it can be abstract. Once again, go back to that filament thing. It can be an abstract and be a filament. It can be linear and be a filament. Okay, it can be parallel and be a filament and whatnot. If you look at gamma bursts from the sun, they're not in a linear fashion. They're a linear, parallel, abstract, driving to a certain point.
So well, you're talking about transubstantiation.
The ambiotic fluid of the planet is causing the chaos that's happening today.
Well, as I'm saying, the galactic wave, yeah, and indeed, you could look at space as if it was liquid, as if it was an ocean, and we may be islands in a three-dimensional ocean, and that it may not be a vacuum out there, and it may be that our sun is pushing forward through a medium like water, like an ocean, and that the bounds of our solar system, the heliosphere, is indeed like the wake of a ship and would, you know, be very difficult to cross. If you were just kind of floating around the end, you'd just kind of bang into this thing because it would be quite a hard wall of turbulence before you got to the kind of outside, exactly like the wake of a ship if you try to cross from the outside of it.
Belikovsky, of course.
Yeah, and yes. So indeed, we're looking at the effect of the galactic wave lighting up, in a way, the amniotic fluid that the Earth is sitting in. And that's what we're seeing in these solar flares and these plasma bursts and all this stuff. It's kind of into life, like the Frankenstein monster. We are entering a new phase of energetics. And that is what the galactic wave is doing. That's bringing us up. It's like a... Actually, I was talking with my guest last night. His name is Shaziz. Go on to everbeyondradio.com or wolfspiritradio.com. You can pick up the archive. Fantastic show. But he was talking exactly this. He was saying that you create a power system whereby you have a bank of capacitors that are used as your battery, and then you have a great big globe and a generator that's several feet away, and the generator generates a huge amount of electricity that shoots across to the other electrode that then goes into the capacitors and is stored in the capacitors. You use that as a power store. Now, if you consider that is the model of our solar system, that the planets are a capacitor bank for the stars, then you have a new idea of how the solar system works. How about that?
Well, I'm an electrician. I'm a power lineman. I'm also a bit of an electrical engineer. That's a hard one for myself to take into my paradigm. Okay, mm-hmm. Because you drive down, it's electrons. It's electrons. There is a force. Okay. That there's a resistance, and then there's a passing of energy. That's how energy usually flows. It has to flow through a resistance. Okay, a pressure has to flow through.
You mean a medium?
No, the resistance, I guess, is the medium.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is that there's nothing between the Earth and the Sun that is a conductor.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff between the Earth and the Sun.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
We just can't see them.
Exactly.
I mean, once again, like I said, get down to the electrons, get down to a level where, I mean, forget about quantum physics. I mean, that's huge. I mean, as you know, JP, consciousness creates energy when it's used. How small is that particle? Go that far. That's where I'll take you with that. That's okay, if you want to look at the electrical universe, okay? I mean, and we're just these mealy little human things with these primitive brains, and we're creating that kind of micro, super whatever energy so small that we don't even, nothing, I mean, it's, but collectively it creates a mass. And that mass could be gravity. Okay, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be a doggone lead ball. It could be gravity. It could be a push of air. I mean, everybody thinks air is nothing, but when you get a push of air, where'd that energy come from? What is behind that energy? That's right here on this planet, and people don't even, can't even grasp that. So anyway, thanks a lot for having me on. Appreciate it. And I guess I'll leave those thoughts. Okay?
All right. And, thanks very much.
Okay, all right, you guys have a good one, okay?
Yeah.
Hey, you can stick around if you want to. Don't feel shy.
That's okay.
Oh, no, I'll listen on the, no, I'll listen on the radio.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeff.
Yep. Having you. Come on back.
Okay, well, thank you very much. You guys stay out of trouble.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, so, back
well,
to the galaxy.
That was a little compliment.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It's always good to have a brush with Jeff. It keeps you alive. So, there's a lot to speak about, but in terms of the galactic wave, and I'd really like to. Do you mind muting your microphone, SJ? Because I'm hearing an echo from my voice.
Yeah, certainly. Actually, I should get off and get rid of that thing. I just wanted to say I have really enjoyed you as another person on this planet, bud. I consider you to be a treat, and talking with you is always a delight.
Well, brothers and sisters, indulge yourself, as SJ does, every Monday, 5 PST, what, 18, no, is it 8 Eastern, 5, 6, 7, 7 Eastern?
My show, if you're referring to
8 Eastern,
Stream
yes.
Consciousness, is on Wednesdays at midnight on our Channel B. Midnight Eastern Time, of
midnight
course.
Eastern.
Is on Eastern Time.
Or 9 PST, which is just after we finish. So we,
9
yeah.
Pacific Coast Time. Or as I call it, the left coast.
Depends which way up the planet is. We'll talk about
that's,
that.
It's your orientation and your perspective that is really the treasure that you gain in this life.
Did you know that America, if you turn it around and you look at America from a different angle, it looks like Donald Duck.
That's right.
Anyway, thank you very much, SJ. God bless you, mate.
Love you.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, there you go. Very interesting. Now, here's the thing. I've been looking recently at my spiritual guidance. You know, everybody, I really believe that you can have a connection with your soul very, very directly. Indeed, that you are a soul connection in your better moments. And living a spiritual life is just increasing those better moments. Once you realize that you can have better moments and it depends on the way you're approaching things as to how good the moments are, then you can start actually changing your life. Because that's when you realize that your life encroaches onto reality rather than the other way around. You then become a creator of your life rather than a simple experiencer or like a passenger. You become the driver of the bus, or you become the person who runs the fleet of buses, the person who determines where the routes go, that sort of thing. And as you go up, that's what we call spiritual initiation. And eventually you realize that, you know, this is all very well, and I can make changes in my own life, and that's good, but what about, you know, making things better for everybody else? Well, that happens just naturally. In fact, miraculous things happen when you make an inner determined choice. Many things happen when forgiveness happens. Forgiveness is... it's miraculous. I'm not just sort of exaggerating when I say miraculous. What is a miracle? A miracle is something that happens without any direct influence, but causes good all round. So something that happened, you know, now you could say, you know, winning the lottery, yeah, oh yeah, great. But there are other things. We call that manifestation. Good things happen. Somebody might come by, you know, you've got no wood for the week, and somebody says, oh look, somebody delivered some coal and I can't burn coal in my fireplace. Can you use this? You know, little manifestations. These are miracles. It's a miracle. They happen every day. They happen every hour. They happen every minute. You just don't notice. And so when you do start noticing these things, that means you've got a greater focus in your brow center, and that you've got a communication going on with your elemental body, your being, you know, the avatar. The avatar, the person who you call me. You know, this creature, the human, has its own consciousness. This is one of I speak to my guides, right? I do it by typing. You know, I get this feeling, and this feeling kind of expands into this bunch of words that seem to make sense, that seem to almost sound like me, but aren't really me. It's like another part of me, but is much more wise, much more timeless, much more dispassionate. And I'm not saying cold. Just dispassionate, just not like not involved. It's like, oh yeah, yeah. It's quite humorous. Dispassion with humor is jesting but not cruel. You know, like the same way that a kung fu master might mess about with an acolyte. So I speak to these people. Or this being, who could also be me. Well, who also has said, you know, it's me. It's the me that hasn't actually got a physical voice. Well, not at the time. This is 2009, and I didn't have any idea that I would be reading, you know, being an internet radio host, really. Well, I had started, but I had no idea that I'd be a talk guy. Because, you know, at the time I was doing, like, DJ. And I didn't say a word. I was just playing music because I enjoyed just playing the music. But then people started saying, oh, why don't you speak some more? So it becomes like that. Stuff. Meanwhile, so back in 2009, in September, this came through. And it's quite fascinating to read this. I've been making a kind of collection of my connections, my speakings, my channel, my guidance. I don't know. I haven't got the right word for it yet. My transmissions. Anyway, so sometimes most of the time they talk about personal stuff. You know, this. You know, what's happening with my relationships around me, and you know, people around me, and sometimes people ask me questions for them, and they, you know. But there are times when they give a kind of more galactic perspective and a, you know, further out perspective. And when they say soon, they don't mean like tomorrow or next month or even next year. You know, soon to them is like 4 years' time, 10 years' time. It doesn't matter. You know, time is not irrelevant. So we can sit here waiting, you know. When's it coming? When's it coming? When's it coming? Well, it's here. Here we are. We're in the middle of it. So, here's something that they said 2009, 5 years ago. There is a large shift occurring in the galactic phase of the solar system. We are providing cover for the Earth in the form of a magnetic shield. It is currently not visible to your scientists. But it says here three people will make a simultaneous discovery of it in due course. No one is looking for it, so no one will see it. There is plenty of protection the shield will give you, and there will be much less damage from the coming solar activity than you would have been without it. Now, since there is this shield, there may be a reduced amount of sunlight carried across too, so vitamin D supplements will be necessary. Thankfully, there is a plentiful supply. once the shield is placed, there will be some kind of outcry from your governments, and they will try to dismantle it. Those are the governments who are hostile to us, and since they are of the Anunnaki and their minions, who are soon to be replaced, this will be but hot air. Nothing will come of it, but their fear-mongering machinations will carry on until the last days of their cabal. So that was from 2009. And now we see, I mean, that's just about everything that's kind of unfolding this right at the moment. So here's another one. This one from 2008. This is November 2008, 25th of November. There are happenings that will make it necessary for humanity to discard authority in the search for their souls. There will be much confusion, but there will be those who cannot become autonomous and will have a hard time readjusting. Some will take their own lives rather than live a true life. There will be chaos, but you and yours are and have always been prepared for this moment. There is nothing to fear, and all is well. The powers that be are waning in their domination due to the removal of their true power base. No one will be left to dominate after this cycle. The judgment will come for many in this form, but not in the form that has... The judgment will come for many in a form, but not in the form that has been imagined by those who wish for domination. There will be a massive redistribution of wealth and resources as society and humanity evolves into something that has never happened in the universe before. Those powers were hoping against hope that it would not happen, but like a parasite whose host has taken an antidote, the blood which has been their nourishment for aeons is turning to poison to them. No more will humanity be forced to resort to fearfulness. There will be another way. Your dreams are real. They will be fulfilled.
Wow.
So how about that? You know, I haven't... That was from 2008. That was like 6 years ago. And, Anyway, long time. Long before I did all this, and, when I was just starting this kind of spiritual expression thing. Expression. Remember what expression is? Like the seed expresses into the world as a tree. From the tiny to the huge. Expression. That's what your dreams do. When you dream consciously. Like when you daydream and like you can... I get this thing, right? I don't know about anybody, but when I want to build something, you know, I think, oh, build a bird, you know, build a little house for my chickens. And, you know, chickens are coming, I need a house, you know, so I'll be sitting there and I'll be building the thing in my head, you know, what sort of shape do I want, you know, do I want any thing on the side, how do I make the roof, you know, and I'll kind of build it in my head and reconstruct it and deconstruct it, and then when I go outside, and then I find pieces of wood that fit with that pattern and cut them and nail them and screw them and put them together, and eventually that becomes the chicken coop. And it's working, and it does its job. It's really good. The base is a bit wonky, but maybe I'll, you know, make a better stand for it, more robust. However, everything starts with the thought, with a tiny, tiny thought, and it grows and grows and grows. It accretes. So you imagine that out of the thought grows a kind of blueprint, skeletal form. The dots become lines. And then you may project that into different aspects. You may look at it from the front, look at it from the side, look at it from the top. There's your blueprint in 2D. I scribble. I write these, you know, I've got this, I consider my drawing to be terrible. It's like a kind of 4-year-old's with a crayon, with a, held in the fist. That's how I feel my drawings are. Anyway, but that's what happens. You know, I take a piece of paper and I draw this thing out. And at that point, it's emerged, it's begun to emerge into form. It starts from the point of the idea somewhere in my solar in my skull. Maybe it happens in the skull. Maybe it happens in my finger. I don't know where that comes from. Who knows what part does the thinking? Maybe the shoulder wants some exercise. I need to saw some things, you know. So there's the chickens. Maybe it's from my stomach saying, haha, I need chickens. I want eggs. So everything starts from the thought, measured, and then expresses into the third dimension. So the first time it expresses onto paper, and then the third stage is it expresses from the paper into the physical, into the actual coop itself, and then the chickens go and live in it. And then I decide whether that's a good design or not, as to how clean, how easy to clean is it, you know, how heavy is the roof. I can't just lift it up and clean it. I have to put a stick up there. All right, well, I'll install a permanent stick so I can lift up the roof and hold the roof in place while I change the straw. A lovely job, may I say, brothers and sisters. But anyway, that's the way. So I read these pieces from my guidance before. I hope you've derived some help from it. Let's just have a look at the chat room. I haven't looked at the chat room. Let's see if anybody's said anything about it. Right, okay. Yeah, well, there's... Who's Stephen Christ? I don't know. Well, quantum mechanics, the dream stuff is made of. Thank you, Hammerhead. He's the best comedian around here, Hammerhead. Anyway... Nazi collaborators. So I'm just checking the chat room, and that was interesting. So yes, the galactic wave and the effects of the galactic wave, and the return of Nibiru and the Dark Star and all of these current themes are, well, you could say that they don't exist, and I just exist here, standing on the surface of this little chunk of rock, this little bauble hanging in space. If you realize that, you have a planetary consciousness. If you can see your place in the world, on the planet. You know, the world is different from the planet. The world exists mainly around the coastlines, you know. The world is what we construct. The planet is different. That's where the world is happening. Anyway. So, yes. 48. Yep, there we go. Cows with guns. Well. Now, where was I? I'm 22. See, yeah, I've got a direct competition here in Hammerhead. Yeah. That's right. That's true. You know, what Hammerhead just said. The hardness of butter is directly proportional to the softness of the bread. Which is always true, you know. Let's talk about beer and bread. Hang on. Because I haven't got any beer. And over there is my tea by the fire. Meanwhile, beer and bread. Beer and bread. I've been thinking about beer and bread quite a lot as I've been changing my diet, because I realized that they're both based on this stuff called yeast, and yeast seems to have been with us for quite a while, but not forever, and indeed seems to have come from the time of Egypt, and it was apparently given to the Egyptians by the gods. Now, as I mentioned this on a thread this afternoon, that this material, yeast, then goes on to form candida in the body. If you eat too much yeast, if you drink too much beer, if you eat too much bread, like us all, like everybody, because bread, it's yummy. That yumminess. Okay. That's a consciousness. That's the consciousness of the candida. When you feel like a beer, beer. Or when you feel like bread, bread. That is the consciousness of the candida speaking through your body. Huh? You think you own yourself, do you? You think you're sovereign, do you? Okay, well, wait till your candida gets hungry then. Then you'll give anything for some more sugar. Give me sugar, please. I need sugar. Something sweet, please. Anything. Candida eats sugar. That's why you crave sugar. Meanwhile, when candida gets sugar, what does it do, brothers and sisters? It brew. That's what it do. It brews. It makes alcohol. Yeast and alcohol? Yes. Beer. So, it's making beer. Remember that hangover? Imagine the worst hangover you could ever have. Imagine it all the time. That's what ME is. You know, there's a lot of what we call diseases or conditions that are the result of excessive growth of candida, which is caused by excessive intake of yeast, which is caused by excessive feeding with bread or anything that's got yeast in it. And I think the gluten thing is a kind of distraction, or it's like a kind of two-parter. Two-part poison. But I really do feel that the gift, in quotes, from the Anunnaki of yeast, the gift of the gods, the gift of the gods, Uzam, Lechem, came from the Anunnaki. Now, are the Anunnaki our friends? Perhaps. But remember, by 2,000 years ago, there was Master Jesus saying, "Beware the leaven of the Pharisees. Beware the yeast of the Pharisees." And we all know that he talks on several levels. So he's talking about physical yeast and metaphorical yeast, which is, you know, what we call nowadays as hype or propaganda. Before, Jeff was talking about words that we have now that we didn't have then. That we can understand things. We have the term nuclear winter. We didn't have nuclear winter. We didn't have the thought of nuclear winter until about 30, 40 years ago, when we realized that all the volcanoes on the Earth will create a shield around the Earth for the sunlight, and then we won't get any winter. And then we won't get any warmth, and things will get cold. Oh, there goes Skype recorder. I hope I haven't lost the call. Unicorn hoof glue. Skype recorder crashed and I crashed. Let me just see if I can pull that thread back. Because it was a very important one. Top with salted chicken lips. Wow. I don't know. I don't know what the vegetarian unicorn stew. That'll be weird. That's strange. Stop sacrificing unicorns. Actually, blood sacrifice. That's what it all started out as. That's where all the problems started. Back in Lemuria, that was a really weird thing. Being regressed back to Lemuria and seeing the beginning of the first blood sacrifices. That was when the sun changed polarity last time. They thought, I know, we'll keep the pyramids going by using chi from humans. What a good idea. Very soon, we'll be rejoining Andrew Aloha on Wolf Spirit Radio with his psychic show. I'll be back next week. Have I got any guests next week? Let me see. Why don't you come on? Why don't somebody come on and be a guest? I have fascinating conversations with people. It doesn't matter who it might be. But it's lovely to speak to you all. I'd like to thank you all for participating in this thought experiment that is Journeys with JP. Do come to my website, everbeyondradio.com, you can book a consultation, and I'll tell you all about your soul stuff. and help you move to the next step of your evolution, which is to raise in understanding and awareness and enlightenment. And that's what you do for yourself, and I help you remove the blocks that get in the way. Usually it's the last one. So, yes. This we go. Yes, hide. Hide. Don't hide. Hide underground if the wave is coming. Where's my... There we are. There we are. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for taking part. SJ, Jeff, it was great to have a brush. Good night, everybody.